Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to Southpaws, episode 407. Much, much motherfucking furry love. Woo-hoo. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Shiva.
Are you down with the clown? Come on, my fellow crackers. Aren't you down with the clown?
I've never actually heard any of their music.
It's okay.
I've heard a parody of their music, like the SNL version of Miracles.
Mystical mysteries.
Yeah, fucking blankets.
How do they work?
Oh,
why does my kid look like Afghan? Yeah. So, needless to say, I'm sure everybody knows.
Kids look just like Afghan.
My two kids
look just like Afghan.
So, like, a lot of their earlier stuff is like kind of trashy and bad, but they gotten a little better over the years. And as a group, like the fact that they're still around and not dead from fentanyl overdosed or anything after all this time shows they got a little bit of staying power. And you know, the fact that they have had kids and the kids have turned out all right so far is pretty impressive too.
Some might define turning out to be a furry as turned out all right somewhat questionable.
You know, that's all right. We have our own scales that we're working with here,
right? Yeah,
so
yeah.
Obviously what we're talking about MFF.
I was normal. I mean, I was referring to my blood glucose level, but
yeah, no. all my blood tests were pretty normal, but that's about the only shit about me that's normal. Yeah, we're talking about MFF. We're talking about Valent J and his daughter.
Yep.
Ruby Lee, that was just the funniest thing. Yeah. So obviously MFF happened this last weekend. It was the biggest thing ever.
The only complaints I heard about it was mostly line con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's going to happen when you've got fucking 12,700 people or something like that.
10,700. Yeah.
Still.
That's a five lot figure of
furry
people.
Con now.
Yeah.
That's wild. That's so crazy. Cool, though. Yeah. I mean, they have 444 staff. They need every one of them.
Oh, wow. I didn't know their staffing number.
Yeah, they released the thing.
Definitely an appropriate amount.
And, like, yeah, I didn't see anybody bitching, complaining, oh, no, this is terrible. Like, everybody seemed to have a really great time.
Yeah. I was talking to Rama on Telegram, and I was like, hey, so, like, congrats, man. Because I was like, I wasn't actively looking for drama, but, like, sometimes you'll see complaints about a con come across your Twitter feed. And I was like, I didn't see any issues pop up out of the con this year. So I'm like, now I know they were probably dealing with shit behind the scenes like every con did, but apparently no major issues, at least that came up on Twitter.
And hey, so, a fire that happens behind the scenes that John Q. Furry doesn't know about, as far as the furry fandom concerned, didn't happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's really good. I mean, big props to those guys.
Yeah.
Every con has the drunks. They have the disorderlies. They have the stupid kids. I mean, that happens everywhere.
Every con, everywhere, forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still, again, really cool. So Violent J, the father of Ruby Bruce Lee, like, the whole thing starts back with this snake busters.
Yeah.
This video where, like, his daughter bought a fursuit off of Alibaba that was just a total knockoff and a real piece of shit.
Yeah.
And a furry had, like, actual furries got her hooked up with a fursuit, a proper one.
Well, yeah.
And did this video with her in her suit and her dad in his clown makeup. And, you know, this is probably old news, but I'll still put it in the show notes because, you know, some people don't know.
Yeah.
And people were like, yo, you should come to MFF because they're in, like, Michigan or whatever. So it's not far.
I mean,
right.
And Violent J being a cool dad, like, everyone's like, holy shit, this guy is, I don't know much about him, but he's certainly winning in the cool dad department.
Absolutely.
Totally,
yeah.
Decided he's going to take his 12-year-old kid to MFF. And in addition, he's going to get himself a fursuit partial made.
Yeah.
This made up like a fucking clown, like his clown makeup.
His fur pattern is the same pattern as his clown makeup.
Named Kung Fu Joe.
And the question that came up on Twitter was, oh, is he wearing the clown makeup under the fursuit head?
Lord, I mean, that would just be a mess.
Knowing how much people sweat in those things, yeah, that would be awful.
Probably.
Although his clown makeup is probably used to sweat. I mean, because from what I've heard from live stage performers, you sweat like a motherfucker on stage.
I don't know if that'll stand up against, like, contact, like rubbing up against the inside of, like, a fursuit.
I'm going to guess he didn't. Right.
Yeah. No, I'm going to assume that he didn't, but it's funny to
think about
imagine that he goes into the fursuit lounge, pulls off the head, and he's got the fucking clown makeup on underneath it.
I can see that doing it just for shits and grins.
I can't break character, man.
Yeah. But, like, it's one thing, and it's a very cool thing for parents to be supportive and be like, all right, I'm going to take my kid to this thing. I don't get it, but whatever. But this dude went all in and got himself, made a character and got himself a fucking partial.
So you're insane clown posse, juggalo. I mean, how much weirder could furry fucking be?
And, like, there's been some crossover in the past. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is we've talked about this in the last year. The two communities right now that are really pushing hard to get fascists out of their community are furries and juggalos. So, like, we're weirdly united on this. And now, like, the daughter of the juggalo is a furry. And, like, that's awesome. And, you know, I expect with our very varied age and interest range in this fandom that there's probably a not insignificant overlap. I mean, this Venn diagram overlap is not going to be massive, but it's definitely going to be there.
You know, furries, juggalos, these people are your friends. They fight for freedom.
Yeah.
People actually made those, like, as free badges. Those little
cards, yeah.
They made them as badges and, like, they distributed them around the Anthrocon Zoo. So I had one. Whereas, like, it was, I'm walking around with it on my lanyard. It was like, juggalo, this man is your friend. He fights for freedom on my lanyard.
Awesome. You know what? I was just thinking, and I don't think I realized this at the time that the snakes video came out, was that video is probably very helpful for new furries, because I bet a lot of young furries think, oh, I could get a fursuit I could afford, and they order it from these third-party people overseas that just churn them out, and they're not handmade. Like, I've seen multiple complaints of, like, oh, some popular fursuiter, and they've recreated their pattern, but they do it a really shitty mass-produced version of it. And it, you know, it's all, yeah, it's a big scam and everything. And, like, them having a decent sized platform and fan base and putting that out there that don't fucking fall for this, don't buy from these snakes, go to a real fursuit maker. That's actually really valuable information on it from a fairly big mouthpiece.
Yeah.
You know, that's information that I feel a lot of younger furries that are maybe interested in getting a suit should absolutely have.
The other cool thing, too, like, Sonic Fox was there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everybody was getting photos with those guys, Sonic Fox and Violent J and Ruby. And speaking of Sonic Fox, as we are getting a live update, as Sarah was in the other room, we hear him whooping and hollering.
And cackling.
The best esports player winner for the Game Awards this year is motherfucking Sonic Fox, who gets up on stage in his fursuit.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah basically said to me, this is what he said. I don't know if it's paraphrase or what. I'll find the video later. But it's like, I'm a gay black furry, basically everything a Republican hates, and I'm the best esports player of the year. Nothing but respect for my president. That is cool as hell. And then Fuzz just linked a thing. I'll retweet it. But it's like,
it's just the from official GameSpot, tweet from GameSpot. Yeah.
Best esports player, Dominique Sonic Fox McLean, Sonic Fox 5000, the best boy. And it's him in his fursuit. That's so fucking cool, honestly, y'all. That's so fucking cool.
It is.
Because he tweeted earlier tonight, he's like, yo, I'm heading to the Game Awards, y'all, and it's him out of suit, but he's got his head under his arm. So, that's cool.
Got my equipment with me. Like,
I got my stick under one arm and my head under the other. Ah, that's cool as hell.
That is.
And so, like, yeah, MFF seems to have just been this just overwhelming success, and I'm really happy for those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Like, Riot did a cute little infographic that has all the stats on it, It's like FurFest 18, 444 staff, 10,700 attendees, 1,400 employees at the Marriott. Foxes and Pepper, their charity concert, raised $10,000.
I saw that. That is so cool.
And their total to charity this year, $92,700.
Holy fuck.
Isn't there other shit that they need? That's not the final number. Because after that, they were like, the hotel donated like an additional $1,400 from a special drink that they had on sale at the bar. That was like, if you buy this drink, portion of the proceeds go towards the con charity. So they've still got some additional monies like rolling in. But for a single con to raise $92,000 for
their... That's insane.
That's wow. And the charity this year, I have to thank Sean Rabbit for bringing my attention to it. It's totally in my wheelhouse. It's a childhood literacy charity that is also dog involved. It's called Sit and Read, if I recall correctly, where like children get to like sit with volunteer dogs as they read their books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all the dogs are privately owned, but they're specially trained and stuff like that. And
is it the one where they practice reading aloud to the dog that doesn't judge, you know, when they stumble and fumble?
I'm not sure.
I think that I know that there's a program like that. I don't know if it's this one.
There's probably a lot of them. This one is specifically based in Chicago, so it's local to the convention. But I gotta imagine that for a nonprofit, a cash dump of $92,000 over one weekend is a major windfall.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Furries, we should be totally proud of our community and the amazing things we're doing. We have this record-setting convention, $10,000 at the Fox and Pepper show, $92,000 for the charity in total, and fucking Sonic Fox winning like the Gamer of the Year, and Sonic Fox, the best video gamer in the world, and the frontman of ICP at the same convention in the same weekend. Like, what a very diverse experience, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that like someone mentioned LineCon being a thing. So like, yes, there was a line for Reg, but it took one person 3 hours, and then I saw someone else later, it took him an hour and a half. So clearly things sped up over the course of time. There was a line to get into the dealer's room. And then amusingly, I saw somebody in the furry riding chat say that there was a line to get to the Fur Planet table.
So, and you're okay with this?
Which I'm totally okay with that. But okay, so we haven't done like the final numbers yet. It looks like we had a pretty good year, but we've run into a problem now where like the amount of stuff we sell at Midwest is comparable to the amount of stuff we sell at Anthrocon.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthrocon every year we take two cars, but MFF has always been a one car con. And now the team that worked the table there this year are saying like, we need more stock. We ran out of so much stuff, like all four Tempo's books sold out. I know other new stuff sold out. Ask the Werewolves number one sold out. And we were just apparently out of a lot of titles by midday Sunday. So we need more stock and we need more staff. So yeah, we need to devote more resources to going to FurFest in the future. But that's a good problem to have. We basically have two Anthrocons now, is from a dealer selling perspective anyway.
Well, just an old sheer numbers perspective,
yeah,
too.
so that's good. So, you know, so it looks like we did pretty well, and online sales were doing well also. So, and I heard all my team said they had a good time. So I haven't gotten details yet, because honestly, it's just been rock and roll since everybody got back into town and we're always busy. But so that went well. I heard good things from my Fur Planet peeps that went up there.
And I'm looking at Twitter right now, and like, just everybody I follow is like, fuck yeah, Sonic Fox. And this is like not just like furries, but like, uh-huh, Rami Ismail and Austin Walker and like Sean Murray and Casey Explosion, all these like larger people, larger following. Scott Benson was like, woo, Sonic Fox.
Oh, sweet.
So it's like all these like game industry people that are like, hell yeah, this kid is good people.
Is Scott Benson Bombsfall on Twitter?
Okay. Night in the Woods guy.
Oh, I know he's the Night in the Woods guy. I was just trying to remember which Night in the Woods guy, because there's other people, too. Like, he did the art and animation.
J.D. LeCade is like, man, not even a week ago I'm hugging this guy, and now he's Gamer of the Year.
nice.
I think it was... Who was it? I think Noxie was like, Sonic Fox better win Game of the Year.
That's awesome, though.
He's a good kid. I mean, he's only, like, 21...
Mm-hmm.
And he's out here killing it.
Yep.
Good on him.
So that's just really cool. Like, it's the Game Awards tonight. They're announcing new shit. I'm not getting to watch it, but Sarah is updating me. I will go home and watch it. Because I can watch the VOD.
And your live Husky update stream.
Yes. I got the Husky update stream on my phone. So that's the good con news this week. So this is another thing that I wanted to talk about, though. We didn't bring it up last week because...
It was early in the story and developments were still happening.
Yeah. There was an article posted on Dogpatch Press last week about Corgi events. So, big disclaimer here. I am extremely biased in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this company. I don't like this guy. So... I'm coming into this conversation a completely biased person, and I have very good reason. Corgi Events is a for-profit convention organization involved 8 conventions. The guy Corey Woods has been in the helm of 8. So there's 2 anime cons, Ponyville Cider Fest, Winnie City Pony Con, Denfer, Aquatifer, Painted Desert Fur Con, and Golden State Fur Con. And the reason I'm so biased is that as the owner of Ponyville Cider Fest, he tried to sit on my weekend 3 years in a row, which would have been a real shit move in terms of my convention's attendance. So this guy has tried to cause material harm to my business in the past and is therefore super not my friend. So... It turns out that this guy is currently being sued by Lemon Brat, the company...
Fursuit-making studio.
Fursuit studio.
And Kagumi.
Yeah, they make a bunch of stuff. And turns out that he allegedly has embezzled $40,000.
$40,000 that they proved. There's a lot more that's out in the wind of...
Allegedly wrote $15,000 plus of bad checks.
Yeah, which is actually a felony, right?
Oh, yeah, that's super felony. And embezzling $40,000. See, that's low-end white-collar crime. That's actual prison. You're not, like, rich enough to avoid prison. You're just a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they actually prove that, that's some deep shit.
Yeah, and it is really interesting, too, because it raises a lot of questions about what is this guy's convention company doing? Like, this is my thoughts, again. Like, if this guy's been sneaking money out of this business, has he been using it to fund these other conventions? Is he shoring up his personal income because running small furry events and pony events don't make money? Like, I'm really curious because this guy runs a for-profit company that's trying to set up camp in our fandom, which I'm super against. And now he's involved in this legal matter and very unceremoniously jumped ship and, like, handed all of the leadership roles to one person.
That doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, they handed it all over to one person, and they're finding people to step up and be con-chairs.
Okay.
So,
because the co-chair or vice-chair moved into the con-chair role for Denver.
Yeah.
And they've moved people around.
Yeah, but initially it was all handed to one person, and then they've figured out who's going to take over for each of the little ones. Because this one dude was the con-chair for all the furry cons, which, not doing it as a full-time job, but having a flexible schedule that would allow me to do it more or less than a full-time job, I could barely fucking handle one con, let alone 4 or 6. You know, he's not very involved with the pony cons anymore, but he's focusing on the furry stuff. But even then, like, 4 cons? What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As far as I know, the only one that's really broken out as far as attendance is Denver. Which totally makes sense because it was in an area where the local con died, did not have a con at all in 2017, and then Denver happened in 2018, and their attendance basically picked up where the previous con left off.
And it didn't die because of attrition, it died because of, you know...
Malfeasance.
Yeah, so it wasn't like it was something that tapered off and died and there was no interest. No, it was very, very much interest, and then it poofed.
But the other ones, I think, have all been fairly low sub-1,000 events, And what's interesting is the newest one, Golden State FurCon, is basically in Califer's own old location and date. And while there's not been a lot of movement, from what I could tell, on Califer finding a new venue, and they haven't said anything officially in months, but they also have not officially announced that they're like a closed event at this point, you know? Yeah. So, like, if Califer wants to come back in 2019, well, now Golden State is happening in April in Irvine. And that's basically right around where they were.
And this is where we get into the question of, like, do for-profit cons have a place in our fandom? Do these kind of events that come in act predatory towards established events by sitting on their dates or being, like, in the same area, like, a month or two off? Should we tolerate this? Because, honestly, I don't think we should. Like, I firmly believe that conventions need to spring up from the local community, not some fucking outsider who's running 5 or 6 dozen cons, or in this case, just 4. Because this happens all the time in, like, sci-fi and anime conventions. Mm-hmm. You get some motherfucker that runs a dozen cons, and inevitably there's some giant fuck-up, and they just pull up stakes and leave. It's not run by locals, necessarily. It's not led by people that know the local scene. They're just, we're here, there's a convention already here, so we're going to set ourselves a week or two away, or a month or two away, and see if we can't just vampire off attendees and vendors. And they're also doing it in a for-profit capacity. So it's not even like doing it, oh, we're raising money for a charity.
Well, they do charity raising as well. They do have con charities, but yeah, it's still a for-profit company. Like, he's trying to make a living at doing this, which, I mean, I'm like, how much money can you possibly make running furry cons?
And that's the other thing, too. Like, having run a pony con, uh-huh. Like, yes, technically Nightmare Nights was for profit because our parent company was for profit.
Yeah.
But we sure as fuck never took anything home.
So I want to say, not as a counterpoint, but just as an in addition to this, I don't believe there's anything wrong with a furry convention's corporate structure being for profit. An LLC is infinitely easier to set up and a lot less paperwork and a lot less having to run a million things by the IRS trying to get a 501c designation. Like, Oklacon had a for-profit structure, and they weren't a bunch of dicks, you know. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that, provided that you're doing all of your financial due diligence.
And so long as you're not being predatory. It's a predatory accent.
Right. Going to what you're saying, Savard, I tend to agree with you on a for-profit company setting up a bunch of furry cons like a franchise is very dubious. And something I learned on Twitter, and I don't know the full details of this, and I don't know the person who's saying this, but there's a person on Twitter who has leveled the accusation that they came up with the idea for Golden State FurCon, asked the CEO of Corgi Events for, like, assistance and some backing, and then that guy and a couple of his other locals were pushed out for Corgi Events people to run Golden State. Now, I don't know if that original person, I don't know if they're 15 or 50, so I don't know if they were actually qualified to chair a con, but just, this is out there on Twitter. This person claims that that's what Corgi Events did to them.
I will cede the point that, yes, necessarily being an LLC is not in itself a bad thing. But when you're coming in and you're for-profit acting in a shitty way towards established nonprofit entities doing the same thing,
yeah,
it ain't kosher. That's just my personal moral feeling on it.
And if there was somebody going through and setting up franchising, like, and you got something like Golden State saying, hey, we want to start up a furry con. They come in, they put down the money to do, all, like, deposits, and they kind of start it, but they leave most of the organization in, like, locals' hands, and maybe they take a cut at the end. I'd be kind of okay like that, but I do not like what they did with Ciderfest and other ones where, especially what they did to Califer, where they go and basically try to interject themselves into an already established whatever. It's how they go about it. After working as much FurryCon stuff or Fiesta as I had, honestly, for the amount of time I sink into it, and sometimes getting like a little bit of money back for some of the time I put in would not be bad, because the higher up you get, the more time you put in. And just like a small business, I wouldn't mind eventually if I got paid a little for doing so, but I'm not talking about like a living wage. I'm just talking about like covering like some of my hotel expenses and such. And
that's kind of the thing too. Like, I've already spent like $300 of my personal money. Some of it's getting reimbursed, but on stuff for the game room this year.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the game. You know, I put forth my money and effort for the fandom.
Mm-hmm.
It's for the people. You know, I'm doing it for the con and doing it so that we have a good convention. Because honestly, yeah, like the other angle is like, if the only person that's getting paid in these for-profit conventions is a dude at the very top and everybody else gets a pat on the back, that also feels really weird to me.
It feels like, really weird, but if it's something like, think like Akon, and I know that in some ways is a bad example, but in the earlier years.
Yeah.
When they're actually like, they don't have day jobs, like all they're doing is pretty much running, like they're spending all their time instead of like doing a 40-hour work week and then doing this, they're dumping 40 to 60 hours a week in running and setting up a con. I really don't have an issue with someone getting paid to do that if that's what they're doing, is they are organizing day in, day out. You know, I've got no problem with someone getting paid at the top to do that, so long as they're putting in the time and all the work that goes with it to earn that wage and not just like getting some kind of kickback at the end when, hooray, you did it and you didn't put in the effort to do it. Yeah. If it's like their full-time job, I don't have an issue with that.
The bigger question also is like, we're also talking about different tiers of conventions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a large material difference between an anime convention, a pony convention, or a furry convention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, Akon is like, what, 35,000 people?
35,000 people. You have to have contacts with the industry. You have to, like, make these trips to talk to the companies to get your guests. Like, you have to have people that are out there in Japan getting information and talking to people on your behalf. There is a lot of work involved. And the same for a PonyCon. Like, you have to have contacts with the agents. You have to be in the good graces of Hasbro. You need to be, you know, able to raise the money to cover the much higher overhead of having guests with appearance fees. And this is not to say that furry cons are, like, easy mode. I'm saying, though, that there's a lot lower, like,
initial
buy-in, a lot lower financial stakes. You know, we ran our first con for, what, 11 grand that we collectively pooled?
I think it was something like that.
Some really tiny amount like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, no regrets. We've grown to where we are today.
Yeah, but and like, that was for, like, a 500-person convention.
But, like, for Nightmare Nights, our year one budget was, like, 65 grand. Something like that. It was big. And, you know, you've got this much higher overhead.
Right.
And kind of bend it back around. Part of my reason that I super, like, why I'm so resentful towards Ciderfests, trying to sit on our dates, because of what they're doing is they're also trying to cut us off from certain guests. Because people can only be in one place at one time.
Right.
Or if they're in before us or after us, a guest might have to choose between going to one or the other.
There's because
they're
so
not
going
to go to two in a row, you know? And so, like, that was part of the predatory behavior that I had to deal with. Thankfully, we had a better relationship with the agents than they did. But again, it's like, this is the kind of behavior we're talking about, where it's not outwardly dickish unless you're part of the people that are directly being affected by it. You know, there is totally room for a million furry cons. Like, there are a million fucking furry cons. You know, we had a thing here not too long ago where we had, like, what, 5 furry cons in one weekend?
Yeah. And only 3 of them were in the continental U.S., I think.
But still, it's 3, like, little 1,000-something furry cons, 1,000-person furry cons are in our country.
And the other problem that we run into with that is that holiday weekends are very popular. So I think one of those years, it was like Memorial Day weekend, had like three furry cons mm-hmm. in the U.S. or something like that. And you look at like Labor Day weekend as traditionally World Con's dates when they're in the States. It's Method Fur Meets dates and it's Dragon Con's dates. So like that's in and out of the fandom, there's a lot of competition on Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. And it's like, well,
and AnthroCon is 4th of July.
Yeah. When it comes down to it, furry cons, yes, they can exist alongside each other, but the odds are you're just going to end up weakening them both.
And also I'll say that like spite cons or fuck you cons, as I call them, usually don't work out. Like there was a situation in Ohio where like Morphicon, which is now called Anthrohio, they had a name change a few years ago. There was a group in that area that didn't like the way Morphicon was run, didn't like the type of con it was. I can't comment. I've never been to one. But they decided to set up a competing convention. And apparently Columbus and Cincinnati, they're like spitting distance from each other. So like one was in Columbus, the other one was in Cincinnati. It was a few months apart. And they were like, we're going to start a rival FurCon in this area. Because we don't like Morphicon. And, you know, it ran for like 2 years and then folded. Because, like, spite will only get you going so far. You know, spite will be like, there should be another FurryCon. And then once you actually get into the nuts and bolts of how fucking difficult it is to actually run a successful convention of any type, yeah, your dislike for your other local con, it's not really going to see you through that many years of operation. And back onto the subject of Corgi events, like, so there's Arizona FurCon, which is in Phoenix. I've heard rumblings that, so the company that owns Arizona FurCon runs Arizona FurCon and Itty Bitty FurCon, which is in the same city, but it's only like a 2-day thing. It's a much smaller scale event.
So kind of like Fiesta.
Right. But I've seen a lot of grumblings on Twitter that they're not owned by a furry company. It's not furries doing it. It's people from the anime community. Whereas when I went to the first one, like, it seemed very mixed. Like, there was anime people there, but there was furry people there, too, on the staff. And they all just wanted to, like, put it together and have a good time. I don't know, like, the politics of our local community, though. I've only been to one of the cons. So, Painted Desert FurCon starting in basically the same area. And it's, like, 2 or 4 months after Arizona FurCon. And this is something that the owner of Corgi Events said in his interview with Dogpatch Press, was in that situation, in that area, locals wanted another option. So that seems to me like it's like a, it falls into that spike con category of like a certain group of people didn't like that AZFC is not entirely furry run. So they wanted to have a by the community for the community thing, but it's still in this for-profit company that owns 8 conventions. They're trying to put it out as kind of this grassroots thing in the Arizona community, but I'm like,
but is it?
I'm not saying that everyone involved with that is shitty and have really bad motives, but on the surface, from the outside looking in, you're gonna have to do a lot of fucking PR, because I guarantee you, I'm not the only person that looks at this and is like a little skeptical, like, wait a minute, there's already a furry con in that area.
Yeah.
This would be like a riot. I mean, it like one's in like Phoenix, one's in Scottsdale, which is kind of like, you know, if Fiesta is in Dallas and a rival con starts up in June in Plano or something, you know, like just a couple months after. That'd be kind of shitty, you know?
We did that to ourselves with Fiesta.
Yeah. But that's more like Itty Bitty FurCon.
I know. It's
like this little tiny spinoff thing. If Fiesta became much larger and a full scale event, I would highly recommend pushing it back to later in the year so that it wasn't just 3 months after TFF.
Yeah. Phoenix to Scottsdale is 13 miles.
Right.
Yeah. I wasn't sure like how close that was, but yes, your analogy is spot on.
Yeah.
In here in Texas, we've got like ACFI, but they're a full 6 months away from us.
Yeah. And like and a 5-hour drive. Yeah.
Texas is big. That's totally cool.
This state could probably support three thriving for cons.
Yeah, slap one in El Paso.
Depending slap on one in how
Texarkana.
How far apart they were spaced and, you know, at what time of year and everything. I mean,
we've got the two Oklahoma cons coming up in 2019.
Yep.
And they're still, like, Oklahoma City is still 3 hours away.
Yeah.
They're not going
to. One in January, which I will unfortunately never be able to go to because it is over President's Day weekend, which is always when further confusion is.
Yeah.
So I'll be. It's in January.
This coming January?
Yeah. Oh, not President's Day. Sorry. Martin Luther King.
Well, no, weekend. I'm just saying that the first one is in January of this year. Coming year?
I believe it is. Or maybe it's January. No, that one's January 2020.
Okay.
Because I was the other one that is in Tulsa, I think, is in October of 2019.
Yeah.
And whether I'm able to go to that or not kind of depends on whether it falls on the same weekend as ACFI, which is also typically in October.
Yeah.
And they're kind of equidistant. I think the one, whichever city it is in Oklahoma is slightly closer for me.
It's Tulsa.
But that's also, one's in Tulsa and one's in Oklahoma City. And I might be mixing them up. By the way, one is like, I keep forgetting the name of the
Twisted Tales or something like that?
No, it's like, it's something to do with tornadoes. Tornadoes and Tales?
I don't know.
Maybe?
I mean, it's in Oklahoma, so it's very on brand for the state.
Yeah, totally.
So,
just like Furry Fiesta is, frankly, on brand for Tex-Mex state. Like,
and Alamo City is an excellent name for a one.
Alamo City, yeah. Like, the local Comic-Con is Alamo City Comic-Con, so, yeah.
Yeah, and so the bottom line is that we want our convention scene to not have the same level of SpikeCon bullshit and dubious actors that occurs with really large regularity in the sci-fi and anime and comic cons.
Uh-huh. We don't look at the expo and the comic con, whatever.
Well, we had this thing locally where I think it was Fan Expo Dallas was on the same weekend as Acon, the one of the last years they were at the
Anatole.
Mm-hmm. And they had people go into the parking lot of the Anatole and put flyers on the cars of the fucking for Fan Expo. Like, bring your Acon badge and get $10 off your admission to Fan Expo or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And they're super for profit. And the thing is, like, also, remember, were you there at, what was it, Rockin' Nerd Year's Eve, where it kind of fell apart?
Yeah, I was. That's the one where I met Stan Lee, and I got a picture with him and Sylvester McCoy, and I think that was the con I met Nichelle Nichols at as well.
That's cool.
Which, like, okay, so from an attendee perspective, it was great, because there was very low lines for all of the guests. And I didn't have to stand there with, this was back when my back was still killing me. So I didn't have to stand there for ages suffering, and I could walk right up and, you know, and get my picture taken. From a financial perspective on the part of the con runners, it was a disaster.
Oh yeah. You know, Stanley probably doesn't, he doesn't show up anywhere now, rest in fucking peace, but he probably didn't show up anywhere for short of a quarter mil guarantee.
I don't know the numbers, but I imagine he was expensive.
Yeah.
And I imagine Nichelle Nichols had a decent appearance fee as well.
Yeah. And education time with Saverin.
Yeah.
A guarantee is when you are guaranteed a certain amount of money, either in appearance fees and or autograph funds and or
combination.
Whatever accommodation to equal to that number. So if they sell $100,000 worth of autographs and get X amount from the hotel, that means that the remainder is paid from the con organization.
Yay! So you better make sure you can hit those guaranteed
numbers.
Better
fucking hit those guarantees.
Yeah. This is why you hit a point of diminishing returns on inviting guests, where, like, just adding more and more and more guests isn't a guarantee of more and more and more success, because each guest has a guarantee that you have to be able to pay them.
Yep, and we saw that in the Pony fandom with Lost Pegasus.
Right, yeah.
That was a fun one. This whole conversation for the past little bit has also been from the perspective of three old farts that have been involved with the convention game for at least a decade minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we've seen all this. We've been there and done that. Shiva, you were board president of Fiesta for how many years?
7.
You and I have both been on the board for a decade. Fuzz, you were on the board for a number of years. You're also a vendor with For Planet. So we see all this stuff from the inside that John Q furry fan or pony fan or anime fan doesn't necessarily see. And so, like, our perspectives on why we're very questioning towards for-profit dude.
Yeah.
Is from what we've seen, you know.
And, you know, you have personal interactions with a couple of the other cons he's run in your capacity as a Pony Con chair. I get that. But for me, for not having that personal interaction, like, my approach to sort of corgi events was sort of like, I'm a little dubious, but let's see. And whenever somebody fucks something up, I always assume that it is ignorance or somebody got in over their head and didn't realize what a massive fucking mistake they were making, rather than malice. So I'm willing to withhold judgment on most things. But then when, like, a major fucking vendor into fandom is like, hey, this guy stole 40 grand from us. And I'm like, I know that, like, yes, you could sue for anything and it has to be proven and stuff like that. But that does make me take another couple dozen steps back and be like, whoa, you know, my earlier concerns of, is this a good idea, suddenly come into sharper relief. And I'm like, ooh, this does not seem like a good operation, you know, and coupled with what I know from you, I'm like, pretty dubious about this. And now the people that are running these individual cons now are all saying, no, 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 this guy has resigned from con chair. He stepped back. He's not involved in any of the local running of the cons and stuff like that. Okay, great, fine. He still owns them. Corgi Events is an LLC, still owns all of these conventions. And while it's all the facts are kind of up in the air now of, like, if he loses this case, if felonies are involved for the bad checks, if his assets are seized, then all the intellectual property, like the trademarked names and any other assets that these conventions hold, is all owned by Corgi Events LLC. And if that goes down, all of those cons just lost, like, a shitload of money, as well as all their intellectual property and their URLs and all of that stuff. So they may have to start from the ground up. And I mean, one thing about LLCs is that if you're a sole proprietor LLC, you just file that as a Schedule C on your taxes. The IRS doesn't make you do a separate form like you would with a partnership, or, you know, a larger or an actual organized corporation. And the problem with that is that if things get tricky legally, LLCs are supposed to protect you personally from any loss that the company has, but you have got to be on your P's and Q's. You've got to maintain a separate business account. You've got to not be using the same credit cards and the same checking account and stuff like that.
God, commingling funds will fuck you so hard.
Yeah. So, you know, even if this guy goes down personally, if he's commingled funds, if it's a sole proprietorship, if he hasn't been 100% on all of his accounting and stuff, and if he's guilty of this, then I guarantee you he has not been 100% on all of his accounting and stuff. Then the fact that it's an LLC and a company is not going to protect it if its sole owner goes down for shit. So all of these cons and all the people working on them do have cause for concern. I'm not trying to raise like a huge alarm here, because this is going to take a long time to shake out. You know, it might be a couple years of con cycles before this lawsuit winds its way through the court system and whatnot. But yeah, if I was on a con staff of one of those cons, I'd be really fucking worried about the long-term viability of the organization.
Yeah, that really covers it. I mean, last week it was this little softball interview, and I'm just like, ah, no. And then we had the Lemon Brat thing that spurred this entire conversation this week. So it was a good thing we didn't touch it last week, so we could touch on it a lot with all of our sticky fingers this week.
So a lot more's come out since then.
Bottom line, I really love that our fandom is doing so well when it comes to with the convention scene. We're largely doing great. We're raising lots of money for charity. We have super positive, high visibility media coverage. The CNN thing helps. The Sonic Fox super fucking helps. Violent J bringing his daughter to the con helps. You know, it's a lot of positive press. And so we want to see that continue and we don't want bad faith actors coming in. Or, and they don't even have to be bad faith actors. Just they just need to be idiots that embezzle money that would cause a stain, you know? Because conventions going poof for a little bit higher profile than individual idiots, in my perception.
Yeah.
As I said at the beginning, I'm super biased in this conversation. I admit that. So that's just how it is with me.
I'm trying not to be, but as a business owner, all my fucking alarm bells are going off.
So, moving on to the next topic. Bring back the porn. If you took all the porn off the internet, all the websites would disappear, and there would be only one website titled bringbackthporn.com. So, time Tumblr. To quit my job and start drawing porn full-time on Tumblr.com. Let me take a sip of my coffee and look at the news.
Oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. my solution to this has always been that another organization should start a porn-only version called Cumblr.
So, obviously, if anybody has been paying attention to Twitter, it has gotten a lot hornier lately. Mastodon's gotten somehow more hornier too. Snout's not online. They're good people.
I saw Ace tweet something like that. Like, I've just got the news. We have to be even hornier all the time.
Well, a good number of furry artists have migrated over to Snout.online and other federated instances. So we're having to educate the noobs on proper content warning and tagging because that's important. You know, allowing users to engage with content on their own terms is very... Big
horniness is encouraged, but you have to use content warning.
Yeah. Or, I mean, just be like, yo, here's a picture of my dad in the hospital playing Dr. Mario, but he's all, you know, censored up. People might be squicked by that. So I put it behind a warning saying, like, medical mention positive, you know. Yeah. Anyways, so Tumblr has decided to ban all adult material from its service, period, on December 17th. That means no sex acts, human illustrated, no video, no audio, no GIFs, no female presenting nipples, which is a big point of contention.
Yeah, I saw Misha.
So, Shiva, could you just draw like a little mustache under your nipple and it'd be good? I mean, I say, my nips are fucking big old pepperonis. If I posted a picture of that to Tumblr, would they be like, oh, those nips are too girly, they're too big? Or they'd be like, oh, they're fat man boobs, so clearly they're not female-presenting. They're male-presenting pepperoni nips.
I'm just imagining a video now of a female spokesperson who works for, like, a plastic surgery company or something like that, presenting the new line of nipples that they have available. You know, like if you have a mastectomy or something because of cancer or whatnot, or you just want, like... boob reduction or boob increase surgery. You're like, allow me to present our new line of nipples.
The 2019 new nips.
Yeah. And now that video would not be allowed because it'd be a female presenting nipples.
And their intention stated up front is that obviously they want to get rid of the porn bots, which incidentally, I got followed by a new porn bot like yesterday, which I then immediately, you know, flagged and blocked as you do. But Tumblr has had an issue with porn bots for an extremely long time. Only recently did it get them removed from the Apple App Store.
Right.
You know, they're saying, okay, that there were bots uploading CP. Yeah, get that the fuck off.
But it apparently turned out, I don't know if that whole thing was a red herring, but apparently it turned out that that was just sort of the excuse they used. The justification.
Yeah.
The justification. Like, the real reason is Verizon wanted to sell ads, and a lot of advertisers didn't want to advertise next to all the porn. So Verizon's like, okay, we'll get rid of all the porn. And then their stock dropped.
Yep. The thing is, if I turned off Adblock on my laptop, they were still getting ads on Tumblr. They were still getting promoted posts. So it wasn't like they weren't getting zero ad rev. They just weren't getting enough ad rev. So they were squeezed. They wanted to squeeze it a little bit harder to get more money out of a platform that has never, ever, ever made money.
Right.
Like,
because Yahoo bought this for way too much money a few years ago, and then Verizon bought Yahoo for probably way too much money a few years after that.
So, like, the lineage of this is like, original dude makes Tumblr, says, this is great. All these young people and lots of women use it. Like, it's actually a majority.
It's like
a
54% women.
It's like a large number of women use this platform because it's this you know, it's generally a good platform to post shit on and, you know, do your thing. So the guy sold it to Yahoo for a ridiculous amount of money.
It was in the billions.
Then they immediately like wrote down the value by a huge amount because it didn't make money. Then they did it again. And then eventually Yahoo got purchased by Verizon, like you said, who also purchased AOL. And the reason they purchased it was access to the ad network. So basically Verizon's like, ah, we can sell more ads on AOL and Tumblr and Yahoo. And as a result, my timeline.
Okay, so Yahoo bought it for $990 million in 2013. So basically $1 billion.
And it's worth fucking all.
Right.
I mean, it's a super valuable platform for queer artists and furries and sex workers and all these marginalized people that use it, because it kind of resulted in little bubbles, right? Your posts would circulate in your circles and get out occasionally, but you kind of operated within your own sphere on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my sphere was all furry porn and Pokemon porn and stuff like that. And so that's what I would see. And I'd follow people that would reblog the good shit, and I wouldn't follow people that reblog things I didn't like. And so I kind of got myself a little bubble of the stuff that I like. And of course, there's lots of Nazis, there's lots of edgelords and anti-SJWs and all this other bullshit. There's lots of bad shit there too, but their solution is to kick off all the porn, but not kick off all the Nazis, yeah. Which has been illustrated in various...
people doing side-by-side comparisons of the search results, where they look up furry and it's like no results found, but they look up white nationalism and they get a whole bunch of fucking threads on it. Yeah.
And so basically what they're doing is they're kicking the balance of power from horniness versus Nazis, and they're just kicking the horniness off and going dunk to Nazis.
What a great group of people for the advertisers to tap into.
And that's the case. Like, this weird prudishness that permeates our goddamn society. And it also is having a material impact on artists that I follow and like. Like, these people that have followings in the tens of thousands are having to start back up on Twitter or go over to Mastodon, which is an even smaller platform.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, lots of people starting up for affinity accounts. But again, you're all starting from scratch.
Yeah.
Like, it's fragmentation of these people's fan bases. And, like, Brado, he does this super cute, soft, furry art. It's cutesy, it's fucky, they're, like, all the stuff, it's happy fucking porn. I like it a lot. And they went from having tens of thousands of followers on Tumblr to sub 100 when they launched their Twitter. And they're like, hey, I'm over here, I try to make a living on my art, but... kind of come over here, please.
Yeah. And,
you know, I boosted
them. They also set up an FA, I think, which had like a couple hundred followers.
Yeah, but it's like these people that use Tumblr as a source to, not necessarily to make money off, but as a source to direct people to make money, to direct people to them so they could make money, is now just gone. I mean, it's not dead yet, but everybody's just kind of going, well, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, their algorithm is super bad, too.
It really is. God, I've seen examples of flagged posts that people have... like, you had a whole thread on them. And one is, like, Pinkie Pie and the character from Them's Fightin' Herds. And it's, like, it's just a cute drawing of them nuzzling each other. And there's no nips... female or otherwise in it. Like, it's not an adult drawing at all. It is entirely G-rated.
Because there's two characters that are like XBs of each other. There's Pinky and the llama that was Pinky in the original version of Them Fighting Herds.
Yeah.
But also a reblog of my 5-year progress pictures was flagged. A set of pictures from Elite Dangerous with my spaceship floating over a gas giant. Where I was like, crew of the starlight rests over the rings of this planet before they log off for the night. And it was just scenic pictures of my anaconda with its purple neon livery just chilling in space. That got flagged. Like, fully clothed furry ladies got flagged. There was a GIF set of one of the women who was one of the Amazons in Wonder Woman, who is... literally a fucking Amazon in real life, like just lifting weights and just being like flex, that got thirst reblogged by an artist I followed.
And she was clothed.
Fully clothed?
Yeah.
Muscly as shit, could break any one of us in half, but it got flagged. And then, of course, you saw, like, all the just cutesy art. But it's also impacting anything queer, anything gay, anything trans.
Anything flagged, furry.
Anything furry. Yeah. Like, the furry tag got blacklisted. Like, you couldn't find anything under that tag.
We mentioned that last episode. This is actually a development that's happened.
Yeah, like, we mentioned it last week. Like, that's really weird. I wonder what's happening. And this is like, oh, this is what's happening. It's a fucking apocalypse. You know?
Yeah.
And that really sucks because I really like the pipeline of fresh porn every day. I like, you know, people could always tell, ah, Saverin went to his Tumblr feed because I would pull off all the good porn that I thought people would like. And I threw it into the fan chat, being like, sup, y'all, it's morning porn blogs. Mm-hmm. Here's the good shit, you know. And, you know, sure, I can go to E621 or look at my things on FA, but it was just nice to be able to go and just see stuff from artists you'd never see, necessarily. But, you know.
Today's theme is Rarity's Asshole. Here's 20 posts.
Hey, sometimes that was the case. Though I did kind of lean away from posting the pony stuff into the fan chat.
I just thought of that because of that bag of white powdered donuts that somebody photoshopped to label Rarity Assholes.
Yeah. Spazzy made a bag of that for me once because he did the same thing. He made it in real life. And then, of course, I replied by posting a picture of me going, eh, tonguing one.
Nice.
But that's neither here nor there. It super fucking sucks. And
it does.
I've been trying to boost artists that I've decided to follow. Because there's artists that are like, yo, this is my art account. But if, like, I see people posting, like, bad political takes or a bunch of other shit in amidst their art, I'm like, eh, never mind. But, like, there's another artist, they just go by Soft Dogs, which that's exactly what they draw. They have a very soft style and it's very cutesy, very tame. But they would occasionally draw a dick or two, so they're off the platform. Mm-hmm. But they're over on Twitter, so I've reblogged stuff for there. And I feel kind of bad because, like, my mom follows my account, so I have to be careful with what I boost.
Right.
Like, oh, look, it's this cute little Brayson that Brado drew. Oh, it's being blushy and its paws are covering its groin. There's nothing showing, but it could be horny. It could be construed as horny. Mom, don't look at that. Ah! Such is the life of an adult who has parents on social media.
And has been in my dealer's den.
Oh, she has no innocence left. She just tries to play nice.
Your mom has been exposed to far more things than you ever.
She sure has.
At least she makes money.
Oh, yeah. She super loves going to conventions. That's the thing, too. Like, if she could go to all the furry cons, she would totally go to them as a vendor.
Because
she has fun with them. Like, I'm totally going to look into those other cons, the Oklahoma cons for her,
mm-hmm.
once that comes around, because she just likes going to cons. And while my dad is not going to be able to do nearly as many cons in the future, mm-hmm. I could totally go with her.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be helping her at Harmony Con in February because my dad's not going to be healed up yet.
Which one's Harmony Con?
That's the Pony Con here in Dallas.
Oh, the Nightmare Mix replacement.
Yeah. They're chasing
successor.
That. They're chasing my ghost real hard.
Yeah.
So I'm going to show up there. I'm going to be sitting behind the table and people are like, holy shit, Seth Sandy. I'd be like, who? My name's Saverin. Hi. Here's my badge.
Yeah, I'm a Fennec.
You
don't know me.
And then, of course, I'm going to get myself and I'm going to like ingratiate myself and get invited to hang out with the guests because it's me. Or I'm going to try. I'll see if I can schmooze my way in.
I haven't seen you.
Well, because they're getting like Jim Miller.
Yeah.
And he was a consistent guest. We had him last year in Hammer Nights, and he's going to be like, holy shit, what the fuck? buy some jewelry, Jim. Come on. So, yeah, that's another thing, kind of shifting away from the Tumblr is bad for porn. Holy shit, that sucks. And moving on to, like, the parental thing, you know, we're kind of tangenting here. But my dad's spine surgery went well.
Good.
That was, like, a major concern of mine and been really weighing on me for a while.
That's a major operation, so...
Yeah.
So, earlier this year, my dad had spinal fusion surgery in his neck because that was the more pressing of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your neck goes, you're just dead. If your lower back goes, you're just paralyzed and pissing in a bag for the rest of your life, which is still better than death. But my dad's surgery date finally came up. And his surgery went well, and he's coherent. He's still in a lot of pain, but he can feel his toes again, which is kind of a big deal, because, like, he had, in addition to, like, pinched spinal cord, he also had fractured one of his vertebra.
When? How?
I don't know. Neither does he. But there were, like, it was this extra little complication that they were like, what? Oh, shit. I guess we gotta fix this while we're in there. And they fucking, like, fucking crazy glued that shit back together. So at this point, the only limb that doesn't have metal in it is left arm. So clearly he needs to get some fucking, like, adamantium claws added or something.
And it's like, Dad, aren't you lopsided? I mean... You need some metal.
Well, I mean, he's got metal in his neck, metal in his lower back, both of his knees, his right shoulder was reconstructed. Like, he's in his early 60s and just needs to get an augmentation on his left arm. You know, he never asked for this. That is a major weight off my shoulders. I got to see him again today. I went out to Fort Worth and saw them and brought my Switch so they could play Tetris together. Or not Tetris, but Dr. Mario.
Yeah. Oh, it's pretty cool.
And I mentioned it to Panther that they don't have a way to play it. And I was like, well, just get him a Raspberry Pi and set him up. And I'm like, all right. So that they can have, like, Tetris Dr. Mario with on a SNES emulator. Because they didn't do Tetris Dr. Mario on the SNES Mini. Otherwise, I could have just bought them one. Because that's like $80. But that's... Raspberry Pis are still cheaper. My parents are doing okay. And they're playing video games together. It's extremely cute.
I thought that was actually adorable.
They've been playing Dr. Mario together since the game came out in 1990. Like, they'd be like, Severin, it's mom and dad's turn to play. We're going to play Dr. Mario now. Go play with the dog or whatever. It's like, okay, God. It's like, Mom, I want to play Gauntlet. Nope. Playing it's Dr. Mario.
Dr. Mario time.
That was my day.
That's a hell of a day.
That was their euphemism for sex, too, when you were a kid, when the bedroom doors closed and locked. And they were like, what do you guys do? Play Dr. Mario!
So,
but my... the SNES is downstairs. Dr. Mario!
So, my one cool thing of the week, and I showed you guys it on Saturday when we watched Dude, Where's My Car?
Uh-huh.
Back at Fiesta, this is tangenting on to Furrydom, one of my vendors walked up and... happened to comment that her blood sugar was off because she had been eating badly. And she waved a little thing over her arm and says, wow, it's off. And I was like, what the hell is that? And it turns out it's this thing called Freestyle Libre. And what it is it's a little sensor that you put on your arm. You turn on the little the reader and swipe it. You boop yourself like you're a fucking grocery in a store. And you look at it. And it tells you your blood sugar. Now, if you're not a diabetic, then you're supposed to, a couple times a day, take a little pin, prick your finger, take blood, and it'll tell you what your blood sugar is. And that'll tell you if you've eaten badly or if you need to eat or whatever. And it helps you guide and make better decisions so you don't eventually kill yourself long term by having high blood sugar or low. Well, it hurts to fucking prick your finger. And if you have to do this a couple times a day, it's one of the biggest hurdles to being a diabetic because nobody likes to prick their fingers with needles. And I admit that I'm bad like many diabetics because it fucking hurts. So I see this and I'm like, wow, that's really fancy. My insurance probably doesn't cover it, but that's really fucking cool. Time goes on and like... call my doctor up and says, hey, can you get me a prescription for this and the little sensor patches that go on? Well, I get the reader right away and I keep waiting for my prescription of sensors to come in. And finally, I call my doc and says, hey, can you call this back in again? Because they say they don't got it. Eventually, insurance clears it and I go and I pick it up. Kind of look at it for a couple days. It's like, so I go, I put it on. It's like, and I'm bracing myself. This is going to hurt. And I put it on and I can't feel it. I literally didn't feel it go in. And it's like a little, like, half-inch disc of plastic that sits on the back of your arm. It's glued on really tight. And then you just kind of wave the, turn on the sensor, boop it like you're scanning groceries at the store, and it tells you what your blood sugar is. What I didn't realize is that it also remembers up to 8 hours worth. So overnight, or if I don't do it all day, it'll I boop it and I look at a little graph and I can tell what I've done all day, you know, without having to prick my finger. Now, if it thinks that it's got a goofy reading, it will tell me to go ahead and manually test my blood sugar. So it's not completely free, but at least it's now emergencies. It's not, or at least, hey, something's screwy, double check. It's not every time I'm wondering, and that means that I slack off and I don't do it. So it's basically, I'm a robot, and I can now have this neat little toy that will tell me how I'm doing. So if I'm getting hungry in the afternoon, I can scan myself, see, oh, okay, I'm a little high. I should eat something low carb, like whatever. Or if I'm feeling a little shaky, boop, yeah, that's why I'm feeling a little off. I'm really low, and I can go and have a packet of crisps. But it's without, like, the serious pain that I've had to deal with, like, the last 13 or 14 years that I knew I was a diabetic. So this is really, really, really fucking cool. I'm really enthusiastic about it because fingertips are sensitive.
Yeah.
So the idea of not having to do this and still being able to better manage myself is fucking awesome.
Cool.
So I am utterly thrilled about this.
You're a cyborg.
Yeah, I'm a robot.
So I'm going to share a few tweets here because there is a kind of amusing thread that Boozy Badger started. It's okay. So classic literature, but rewritten for furry centric themes. And the first one he suggested is The Fursuit of Dorian Gray.
Oh, God.
And I'm just going to read two or three of them that are my favorites. Andy Rat said, All Quiet at the Western Front Desk. And another one is Lion, Pride, and Prejudice.
Oh.
So, yeah. Devouring Inferno. If you want to go for a vor theme. Oh, here's an Ayn Rand one, Saverin. Atlas Snugged. So I'm not going to read all of them, obviously, because it's a long-ass thread. But yeah, look that up, because I know, as a furry, I know we love our bad furry puns. And
oh, God, doing.
That is a whole honeypot of them there.
I do like All Quiet at the Western Front Desk.
Yeah, that was inspired. So what do you got, Saverin? Got anything for us here? Oh, we should wrap it up.
Yeah, we should wrap it up since it is 10:30.
Oh, geez.
We had a late start tonight.
This is our last show of the year, folks.
Yeah. So we're going to probably do a couple Patreon things in the interim. Maybe do a show if we get together, have the time. But it is the holiday season. It's a lot harder for us to get together. So many of my other podcasts are doing the same thing right now. Like Trillbillies is doing their season end. A couple other shows are just like, hey, you know, it's super hard. Like Giant Bomb is all preparing for the Game of the Year stuff, which is this massive long, like 12, 13 hours of podcast that they put on at the very end of the year. So they're very light on the content. Otherwise, tis the fucking season, y'all. So we're taking a break and so are a bunch of others, but that's just how these games go. Still probably post a couple things to our Patreon, patreon.com/southpawscast. It'll probably be some more Fox and Wolf movie times. I got to post the Dude, Where's My Car? And I think I need to post the... I think I have one of them in the bag still that I might need to post. I need to double check that.
Because next weekend I've got my big baking extravaganza. Then I immediately turn around, fly out to my folks out in Virginia for a week. Then there's Christmas. Then there's that weird week between Christmas and New Year's where nothing gets done by fucking anyone anywhere. Then we're on to the New Year's. So, yeah, we're heading to a busy couple weeks. What do you guys have planned for the holidays?
The Friday before Christmas after work, I'm flying out to Florida to see my sister, her husband, and my niece. So that will be nice. I'm out there for 4 days, so fly home Christmas Day. And I'll get home like late that night, like 9 o'clock at night. And that's Christmas with family. That's my big plan. Unfortunately, I don't get to spend it with Tieran, but you know, we did Thanksgiving together and we had a lot of people over and stuff for that. So that was good. And that's basically it, you know, business stuff, day job stuff.
Yeah, because I'm flying back Christmas Eve. There's of course, Virginia's chance of getting snow, so that might always get a little bit weird.
I was surprised my flight did not cost me more than it did. I mean, it was like 360, and I was really expecting it to be over 400, considering flying out right around Christmas like that.
That's why we're flying back Christmas Eve, is because Christmas was cheap, but I didn't want to fly on Christmas. I know you are. I didn't want to do it. But anything after Christmas is just the price went boom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, we decided to make it back for Christmas Eve, have it. Because it's just me and Siam going. Sarah's staying here.
Yeah.
So come back, have family Christmas.
My holiday plans are basically just we do stuff with Panther's family. I'm going to see my parents.
It's a lot like Thanksgiving, really.
Yeah, it really is.
Over the Metroplex.
We just do the tour of the Metroplex, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, all of our family that we want to see is local, so we're lucky in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to see my sister, but she's in fucking Canada, so not a chance of flying up there. But yeah, we do need to wrap it up. So as always, y'all, you can find us on Twitter at South Podcast, on Tumblr, until we get banned for being horny, I guess. Southpodcast.tumblr.com. Send us anonymous questions that way. Email us southpodcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/southpodcast. We have our Fox and Wolf movie times. Sometimes it's Fox and Wolf and Doggo. Sometimes it's Fox and Wolf and Chicat. You know, it's when we get together, watch a movie. The next thing we have coming up for that is Dude, Where's My Car? Which sure was a thing. And also had a weird little tiny furry mention in it, which was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Early 2000s Aston Kutcher vehicle. Shibby.
Shibby.
You can find me on Twitter at Saverin Drake. You can find me on Twitch at Saverin. You can find me at Saverin at snouts.online on Mastodon, where I am far more horny. And then it's your turn, Shiva and or Fuzz.
You can find me at Fuzzwolf on Twitter. That's a reference. Yeah, I'm active there. Fuck it. I try to step away, but it's so addictive.
It sucked you back in like a fox.
But yeah, follow my company accounts too. Follow For Planet for all the furry book stuffages
and that you could ever want.
Yeah, that's me.
I'm on Twitter, allegedly. At least I occasionally check it. You'll find me on Telegram, both as Chimera, KHYMAERA. I'm in the South Foss fan chat. So is Saverin. Fuzz has never rejoined us. He's missing all this lovely porn.
I just couldn't keep up. Like, I mean, I think it is great that it's there and that it's super active, but like when I look at Telegram after a couple hours and there's like 1,000 fucking messages, I'm just like, holy shit.
For busy chats like that, I just scroll to the bottom, glance to the porn. It's like, is anything on fire? Are people being rude to one another? No. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I just wasn't that invested, I guess.
I know. I'm just giving you shit, Fuzz.
Yeah, I know.
Besides,
Saverin or Tempo usually forward me to good porn that they think I'll be into.
Yeah.
You know, usually shit with Judy Hopps or Fluttershy, so.
That's one of the great things. You know you're good friends with somebody when they send you porn you like.
Yeah.
And I do that, like, on my desktop.
You send it to Sarah, and Sarah curates and sends it on to me.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is going to Sarah, this is going to Helicity, this one's going to Fuzz, this one's going to the General. Like, everybody has varying flavors. Uh-huh. And like, sometimes they get a little commingled, but, you know, I know my friends' things.
Me and Sarah have a two-person chat where all it is porn that there's some other art in there because it's mostly art of one, but 99% of it is porn. And that's just where we do all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that we can open up each other's chats at work and not worry about flashing dicks, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So we just keep all the porn on that one channel. But on the other hand, you can go to that channel, find all kinds of our favorite shit.
Nice.
But it got to the point where
it's your spank bank.
I was getting worried about opening up his chat at work So I just created this side chat to just put porn over here. That way I don't have to worry about opening up and, oh, there's Judy.
Yeah. There's way more of Judy than I ever saw in the movie.
Oh, man. Like, today, somebody uploaded, like, 15 new pieces from this one Japanese artist, the just Nick and Judy boning. And it was, like, all different pieces. And
that you've never seen before?
Never seen before. And I was like, fuck yes, and just forward it all into the fan chat.
You need to forward that to me.
Okay, well, I can do that here in a bit after we wrap up the show. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, good night.
And have a happy holidays.
And buy a lot of books for Christmas this year.
For Planet.com.
For Planet.com, I updated my wish list because Tieran was like, add some shit to your list so I could buy you Christmas presents. And it was almost entirely books. So,
okay.
Good night.
It's over.